This week, we turn on streaming services for a grand slam of a kaiju animated film as Ultraman gets the Ultra Netflix makeover. Can Spider-Verse-inspired style and a more family-friendly story help bring the Superman of Japan to more international audiences? Or will this movie's yellow light start flashing for us? Come along with us on this beta capsule tapping monster mashing adventure in babysitting. This is Kaiju vs. History, Ultraman Rising. Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your reverse Shohei Ohtani stand-in, Patrick, and joining me is Long Duck Dong as Master Roshi as Ultra Dad Miles. Hey, Miles, how you doing?
Oh, boy. Did you have to bring up Long Duck Dong? Jeez.
That's the voice actor.
I know who it is. But did you have to bring up the worst part,
the role that he's
16 Candles,
probably the most known for. I try to watch that movie and then I get to that to his character. I'm like, oh my goodness, Getty Watanabe. I'm so sorry.
Wait, wasn't he Ling in Mulan?
Yes,
I'll give him Mulan before 16 Candles. How about that? We don't have to bring up Long Duck Dong.
I didn't know of his voice acting career really until looking him up in this movie, but he's done a good amount of voice acting.
And it's always fun to like kind of find that out, that some people swerved a little bit, like Johnny Yung Bosch, who played Adam or the second Mighty Morphin Black Ranger, and stayed with the franchise for quite some time, you know, went on to being a massively successful anime voice actor.
Like, interesting.
He is, I think he was Vash the Stampede. I think he was, like, he's done a ton of work. If you look up his anime credentials, it is a list.
Yeah, that was the thing about the voice acting in this movie, is it didn't feel like a ton of big stars, but it felt like still a well-assembled, you know, voice cast for this kind of movie. We're talking, of course, about 2024's Ultraman Rising, which came out on Netflix June 14th of that year being 2 years ago when we were recording this.
Yeah, which is their second foray into the franchise.
At least, right? Because they had the Ultraman series. And I guess that was it. Yeah. The first reveal of this came at Netflix 2023 Geeked Week, which I'm a big fan of those. It's just like a fun weekend or week of trailers and spoilers and kind of behind the scenes stuff that they do for mostly their nerdier subjects. And this is definitely one of them. But
I'm a big fan of their animated film output.
I mean, it's so funny. This came like 1 year before the grand slam of K-pop Demon Hunters, which is like beyond a kind of cultural zeitgeist smash hit. It's like, you know, the number one, two, and three Halloween costume for 2025.
Right.
And I think news just came out this week that they locked down the creators, the directors of that film.
Like several years, right?
For a while, yeah. So it's probably going to be a while before we get a sequel.
Yeah, I think they've said it'd be like 28 or 29 before the sequel comes out, which is wild. But no, but like they've had a couple that I really thought would break through. One for me that I just absolutely loved was Over the Moon. And the director was like someone who had worked on like all of the Disney Renaissance stuff. And I think they have like the songwriter for like Aladdin or something. And it has a similar style to like some of the other stuff, like the Sea Beast and stuff they've put out, and had a K-pop element. It's just a really, really great K-pop scene in that movie.
I was about to say the Sea Beast, of course, is the other kaiju movie that we looked at. But the first Netflix animated series or film that I kind of watch every year now is Klaus.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Retelling of kind of like a Santa Claus story, but really good voice acting in that and great animation. And this feels kind of similar to that, but it definitely has, I think, more inspiration from, like you said, the Spider-Verse movies, how popular they were. And it, in a lot of the ways, that is kind of how the animation world has gone. There's been a lot of, you know, like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, like very kind
of. Yeah. Wait, the other one that I thought would do better for Netflix because it was so popular, and I think it was nominated for an Oscar as well, was Mitchell's versus the Machines.
Oh, yeah. That was I keep forgetting that's Netflix. That movie was amazing.
It's technically Sony, but like, yeah, it's I think it's the entire Spider-Verse team.
Yeah. That was on there. But then the one that did get Oscar noms and wins, of course, was Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Yeah. Which I'm never upset about GDT getting some love.
So good. But yeah, this movie, I guess, comparatively fell a little under the radar. It got very good reviews when it came out. I feel like the hype for it was up there, but it just did not become, you know,
a global phenomenon.
I would say it wasn't even as big of a hit kind of buzz wise as Sea Beast was, which was surprising. I thought that's just in this Western hemisphere. It just didn't seem to resonate,
which is a bummer because, you know, it did well, got nominated and won some of the Children Emmy Awards. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's the problem with some of this stuff is it's hard to really quantify how well something does on streaming when you don't know the actual results. And when Netflix doesn't tell you.
So, I mean, Netflix tells in a few ways because they have like a featured page and a top 10 page. Even when this movie came out, I think the top 10 was on Netflix. So you can see like, what are people watching this week?
And I don't even know if I trust that, you know?
Yeah. It could be, you know, altered in a few ways. I feel like this movie was not on their, you know, films list for a while, but you have to take that with a grain of salt. Cause it's like, you know, some of their top 10 TV shows are just like Cocomelon or Friends or something like that. So, but yeah, with movies, it's usually a lot of their new releases, but sometimes it's just things that are new to Netflix. Anyway, we've really gotten off on just talking about Netflix, but pretty happy. I mean,
animation
is
always an interesting conversation. We haven't done like a ton of animation.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, more than that, if you're counting the Godzilla animated films, almost all the animated films of the modern era kaiju films have been Netflix. They've been pumping them out. And the series, too.
The only exception is Rumble.
Pretty much, yeah. Rumble was Paramount?
Yeah, Paramount.
Yeah.
I think it was relegated to Paramount Plus when they opted not to put it in theaters.
Because
of the pandemic era. I remember seeing a trailer of that movie in theaters.
Yeah. Right. So hopefully this continues. This is the last animated film on our list, but I think they've already, spoilers, I think they've already said that this probably isn't getting a sequel, whereas I think the Sea Beast is still on track for one.
Yeah, it's a bummer because, I mean, we'll talk about it, but it does set up a sequel in a pretty interesting way. And I think one of the cool things about this movie, because it was something I was going back and forth on, I love how they pay a ton of homage to the franchise and to the original show, but they're not explicitly beholden to it.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about that.
Before we get into any of that, Patrick, you got to tell me what's in the title.
So the title does have some
Ultraman Rising. That's the title.
Well, some countries, I mean, because it is Netflix, it is all over the world. Some did translate the subtitle a little bit differently. Ultraman was the same in every country, just like Godzilla is pretty much the same in every country. But in Hungary, it was Ultraman Ascension. And Lithuania, instead of Rising, it was just Ultraman Rise. Very interestingly, in Russia, the subtitle came out to The Path to the Summit.
I guess that is Rising.
And then Troy Day in Vietnam translates to Rising Up. I don't like the title. Like, what does it mean for the English title? It should be like Raising, right? Ultraman Raising.
I mean, that would actually be a funnier title. I didn't like it either because, like, there's clearly a history of Ultraman and a legacy here that's already at play when this movie starts. So it's not like he's... And even our protagonist Ken Sato has been Ultraman before, and
yeah,
obviously he kind of left Japan to go play baseball for the Dodgers instead of the Braves, which is how you know he's flawed. And now I know the LA Dodgers are a massive team, especially in Japan, because of some of the players that have gone over there. And I also loved how much baseball was in this movie. As someone who loves, as someone who loves baseball, and we are recording opening week for the MLB. My team's opening day is tomorrow, but opening day officially was yesterday. And as a recording, but I thought that was gonna be a throwaway thing, and baseball actually becomes an integral part to this entire story, and that made me really, really happy.
I do like, Emmy with the like telephone pole or whatever at the end of the movie, you know, batter up. We'll get to it.
They missed an opportunity to not have batter up by Nelly and the St. Lunatics on, you know, there.
Because it was such a major part, I would think the subtitle should be something baseball related or more Ultraman related. Just Rising doesn't summon up themes of the movie.
I feel like,
gosh,
it's just, I'm trying to think of like baseball terms that would really work. Like it's not gonna be called Ultraman Ephus, you know, like, or Ultraman like slider. But I do agree with you. I don't love the title. I think it should be a little bit different. So we were talking about just a little bit earlier, you watching this on the Netflix Geek Week or Netflix Next or whatever, the Geeked like presentation.
2023 it was Geeked Week. Yeah, that's when they released the first teaser. I don't think it was a full trailer at the time, but yeah, I was surprised to say the least.
I was surprised because I didn't know how well Ultraman did. And everyone's like, well, it got three seasons. And I'm like, I understand that it got three seasons. That doesn't mean it did well, you know, because Netflix sometimes makes X amount of episodes, chops those up into quote unquote seasons. See Voltron, where you have, season 5 came out in May and season 6 comes out in September. Season 5 is 4 episodes and season 6 is 7 episodes. Like, it's crap like that. So I just didn't know if I felt like that Ultraman did well because it was an adult story. People seemed to be responding to it. I was really curious about how something geared towards a younger demographic was going to work. But this kind of DreamWorks style, I think, played really well with the franchise.
Yeah, they definitely took some interesting artistic liberties with designs and things like that, which I think is fine because Ultraman has looked different in so many iterations.
Correct.
I feel like the fans of the Japanese creation from Tsuburaya are okay with him looking. I mean, they could have made him blue and people would have been like, well, that's fine, whatever.
Yeah, he's been blue, he's been green, he's been multiple colors. How did you feel? Well, maybe not feel, but like, what was your take on the reinterpretation of the counter? Where it's not just 3 minutes, but it responds to your emotions and obviously how badly you've been beaten up.
The counter is, you know, a representation of the show. Like, we can't have that long of kaiju fights, like, budgetarily. So they made that up. It's a little bit like, you know, the Superman's weakness to kryptonite came about because of the radio show to give the actors time off. It was fine. You know, it's one of those things because, like you said, they're playing a little fast and loose with Ultraman in like this its own universe here in the animated universe. I feel like you can rewrite some of the rules that probably wouldn't have made sense to a general audience that was not familiar with the series. It's like, oh, well, why does he only have 3 minutes? That doesn't make any sense. And my question is always like, when he goes back into small form, how long does he have to wait until he can transform again?
Yeah, there's some stuff that like certainly makes you question things. But although I also liked the fact that they had a new way of what the counter meant. I thought it made sense for the movie. They were always a little loosey-goosey with that fact of like, okay, well, how much damage can you take before it turns off? And how long do you have to wait until you can get back into it? Because, you know, we see Ken, you know, get his butt handed to him a couple times, and sometimes he doesn't pop back, and sometimes he does, and I don't know what the rules are for that, and they never explain it. Real quick, while I do like the overall style of this movie, I don't like the human designs very much at all.
I
especially hate how Ken looks.
They're pretty extreme. Yeah. So he's not really like a big baseball player. He really looks like he could be a pop K-pop star, you know?
I mean, he looks like one of your standard guys from like the 90s, like a Chipper Jones or something like that. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, he looks like many actual probably Japanese baseball players, and but he's like billed as like a big hitter, and it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, you don't have to be a big guy to be a big hitter, though.
Yeah. Just he's like string beanie kind of animation style, which I think is, you know, they made him that way to set up the dichotomy of his father being a short mustachioed gentleman.
Which that mustache looks like it was like a Playmobil mustache. Like it bothered me the entire, like I said, I
what about actually, when it showed up on the Ultraman?
Okay, Ultra Dad. I did like that very much. Yep. Because it was so stupid.
Yeah, I could tell something like that was coming, but it makes me interested in this show. And I guess some other Ultra series had the human actor also played by, you know, the Ultraman actor or vice versa. Mm-hmm. But in the original series, it's been Furuya in the Ultraman suit, which is like the alien version of the character. So it was two different actors. They do
not touch the alien angle at all.
Yeah, like I said, it's a different universe. But this one, they transform and really just embiggen and put a suit on. So it looks exactly like how they look, but like a larger version of them. I enjoy that for the animation reasons. And also how, I mean, there's just like a good visual language in this movie that does very well with scale, because the basic plot of the movie we can talk about is, you know, small Ken Sato is actually Ultraman, who is a kaiju sized hero, and he adopts basically a kaiju monster, Emmy, who is tiny compared to him in Ultraman form. When he's Ultraman, mm-hmm. she is almost smaller than a baby. A human baby, scale wise. So she's closer to like, you know, a kitten sized, I guess. But when he's in human form, she is massive. She is like twice as tall as an elephant, just huge compared to him. So there's so much rich kind of cartoon material that they play around with, like her getting around his base and mm-hmm. like squeezing her head through the glass elevator and things like that. There's just some very good stuff with that. I enjoy that part of it. Are there elements of the story that didn't work for you, Miles? You're saying that there are a good amount of differences between the main Ultraman mythos and this universe, which I don't know if the show ever did this. Can you pass on being Ultraman to your child?
So again, this is playing with new rules, because mm-hmm. it seems like Ultraman's more of a family legacy, which mm-hmm. is interesting. I don't dislike that. And the post-credit sting where the mom, who at the beginning of the film proper, not the cold open, we learn has been missing and assumed dead for quite some time.
Yeah.
And she calls from, if you know the franchise, from the home planet of Ultraman. So that is the only inkling we get of like the alien stuff at all. So I didn't mind that it was a family affair. I thought that was kind of interesting. And I wasn't, so at first I was a little, I wasn't taken aback. I was like, no, it's cool that they're doing a family friendly like version. That's neat. But I was a little bummed that like, oh, okay, of course they're going to have a little baby monster and that's how this movie is going to play out. Like it felt like, all right, well, that makes sense. I don't know if that's what I would have wanted from this movie, but I think mostly because, and this will kind of play into my personal feelings about the movie, I feel like they spent so much time on the kind of juvenile, silly jokes that you're going to get kids to laugh at. Mm-hmm. And that's, which is fine, have them in the movie, but they like kept doubling down several times. And I was like, we do not need all, this movie does not need to be 2 hours and 1 minute. Like it really doesn't. This could have been like at least a tight, like 100 minutes.
It's so weird to have an animated movie be this long, because they really do try to clock them in at an hour and a half. And as someone who's worked with kids and teens my entire life, that's now that is much longer than their attention span, you know? Right. So 2 hours is pushing it, even if it is on a streaming service and not in a movie theater. And I mean, there's a ton of places where this movie could be cut. I will say, I mean, the dad stuff is very good. It slows down the movie a good deal, which felt like it had a pretty good clip to it in its first half. Ultra Dad is introduced about halfway through the film. But yeah, it seems to kind of stall out the second act of the movie just a wee bit too mm-hmm. much. I will say that the question I asked you of, can a Ultraman pass this on to his children? That is the plot for the Netflix animated series, right? That's kind of what they do in that show.
Kind of, yes.
Yeah. I understand like that being a connection to their other Ultraman property, but this story was not originally supposed to be an Ultraman story. This was put forth by the two directors who I don't have my notes up in front of me right now, of course. Boop. Shannon Tindall, it's the director of this, and it was also written by Mark Hames and Tindall and Mark Hames, and it was basically given to them. They pitched all the way back in 2001 a series for Cartoon Network called Made in Japan, which was also pitched 14 years later, 2015, as Gamma Man, which was an Ultraman style hero in the same way that the Incredibles from Disney are the Fantastic Four. You know, it was an homage.
Well, it says here in this note you left for me that it actually was more Super Sentai like than Ultraman. Which,
well, yeah, he
that is my bread and butter right there.
I think he was, yeah, just like a general tokusatsu hero, but had adopted a large monster in that initial project. And when they started working for Netflix and Netflix had the rights to Ultraman, I think that was just like, hey, can you make this into an Ultraman movie? And they made it into, I would say, their own movie. They weren't trying to add to the Ultraman mythos that much, which is, like I said, it's fine. I think they don't change so much that diehard Ultraman fans will be like, what is this? You know, they're not going to be like the Star Trek community and tear it apart. It's a fun thing for kids. And in that
let them have
aspect,
it.
I feel like they knocked it out apart.
You I get so irritated with fans like that.
Yeah, I knew from the trailer that we initially got, I was like, oh, this is going to be a fun animated movie because it was about Ultraman raising a monster child who is adorable. Let's talk about the designs for the kaiju and the monsters in this movie.
Okay.
I mean, we can start with Emmy. So toyetic. So
just cute. Just a cute little pink little dragon.
Little monster gets wings later on, transforms in a cocoon, like a chrysalis, and is a smaller version of the, oh gosh, what's the
Tron or something like that?
Yes, it's the first monster he fights Gigantron. It's not a actual kaiju from the Ultraman series, but it's kind of an homage and like a.
Yeah.
A combination of several monsters that have been in tokusatsu all over the place. So I like the design of Gigantron. It really did, because of the size difference, make me think of a King Ghidorah. Mm-hmm. Maybe Rodan a little bit.
We do get some classic Ultraman monsters.
The very short snippets throughout the film.
Naranga.
Toy versions of some of the monsters show up all over the place. I thought that was very fun. Mm-hmm. I would have liked some others showing up to cause havoc when, you know, Ken is just trying to control his daughter. But I mean, we got that in Shin Ultraman, and it was a very confusing movie because it was just all over the place. But this is a movie about babysitting a kaiju more than anything.
Right.
More than a standard Ultraman movie.
I actually, one of the things, so the Yomiuri Giants actually had a tie-in with the movie, and they sold Ultraman-themed jerseys on the day they did that. They did an Ultraman Rising night or something like that.
Yeah.
And I want Pete these jerseys so bad.
It's the one thing I had to make a hard Sophie's choice about in my trip to Japan. It was either go to a baseball game in Tokyo, in the heart of Tokyo, or a New Japan Pro Wrestling show while I was over there. And I went to the wrestling show, even though I feel like the experience of seeing a baseball game over there, even for some of the smaller teams, would be so fun. But
Japan
loves some baseball.
They do. And we have talked about possibly going to a baseball game when we do eventually get down there or across there, wherever they are.
The Tokyo, what's the Tokyo team? What can I remember? Giants. Their main stadium is air conditioned, which would have been a very nice, it's a covered arena field, I should say, but
a dome, if you will,
a Tokyo dome we've seen destroyed. Yeah. I think we talked a little bit about Ultraman designs. The suit is pretty classic, I would say. I think the main difference is that it really looks like Ken Sato is just wearing a suit and he's not transformed into some other being. The same thing with Ultra Dad. I love his official name.
Yeah, I did too. It's like Ultra Dado.
Yeah, what else do we have to talk about? I guess we could talk a little bit about the voice actors.
I got to say, I'm going to pop his name up real quick. I thought Christopher Sean did an excellent job as Ken.
Yeah, I had to look him up. I didn't really recognize him, but he's been in a few different animated and video game voice acting roles and has been in, I don't want to call it old people TV, but Days of Our Lives. He was Soaps. In and CBS's Hawaii 5-0 in a small recurring role. He did great. It's one of those things where it's like I didn't recognize many of the names going into it, but they did a very good job. It felt like they cast this movie more for, I guess, kind of accuracy or believability as opposed to let's get big actors to take on these roles, you know.
For sure.
Like, we're gonna sell Ultraman Rising because Sean Penn is the dad or something.
Yeah, though I think, and one of the things that gets kind of left behind and undercooked is, and this is what I would have done in replacing with some of the baby antics, not all of them. I'm not saying that they didn't need to take all of them out, but they just overdid it. And I think we lost the possibility of having stuff with Ami more in the film as a result.
Yeah, she has a few major scenes with Ken. That's the reporter character, yeah?
Yes, and it feels like she feels super underbaked as a result. And yeah, it's so annoying because she's... Yeah, you think that she's going to have this major role. And I'm not saying they have to have a romantic relationship because they were also vibing as both parents. And yeah,
that's the thing. I feel like she needed to be brought in the fold, maybe around the same time the dad was like, oh, you're Ultraman and you're having trouble with a baby. You know, let me help. I have a child.
Right. Or you kind of get the expectation that she's going to find out that he's Ultraman because she's a reporter and a really good one. And is you even get a voiceover of something's changed in Ken Sato or where's Ken Sato been? And it's all right, well, you're not as good as you think.
Yeah. Ultraman gets the stuffing beat out of him one day. And then Ken Sato doesn't show up to his baseball game. And no one's putting two and two together.
Yeah, there's several instances or when he really awkwardly leaves the dinner, in the middle of a kaiju battle. I that was one thing that kind of really bugged me is I felt that a lot of the supporting characters got and relationships got really underbaked in favor of some of the antics. Now, I understand this is, a film for younger demographics, so you really want their attention, and those baby antics are going to get the attention of those babies.
And it looked amazing. So much of the animation and action was top tier. But yeah, I understand where you're coming from. Both feels too long, and there's not enough in it at the same time, which is a shame because, like I said, probably not getting a sequel to this. This is a one-off, probably fairly expensive animated movie, if I had to guess, just the way many animated films like this kind of go.
I also thought that the KDF and that whole story is kind of dumb.
KDF.
The Kaiju Defense Force.
I mean, there needed to be a bad guy. I do like the...
I don't mind the
mecha pathos. Gigatron and
very, like very that. Cool ideas. I didn't mind the pathos behind the bad guy, but and like, I even like that he didn't want everyone else to die with him. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
And just there's so much here that like I feel there's more to sink into, and maybe it would have been better as like a 12 episode series or something in that respect, because they really do like play with a lot. And not everything really gets developed as a result.
Yeah. A little overbaked, a little underbaked in parts. Like I said, critics did enjoy this movie, though. It's got an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. Pretty, I would say, positive audience scores, like 6-7 out of 10 in a lot of places. 66 out of 100 on Metacritic. So pretty positive. It just didn't make, I think, as big a splash as it needed to when it came out. And with something like Netflix, you have maybe a week to prove yourself on the streaming platform before, like, oh, well, here's the next thing we have going on this next week. Like I said, at the very least, I seem to remember Sea Beast sticking around a little bit longer, getting a little bit more buzz. Yes. So it's hard to measure these things. But yeah, in that aspect, I feel like this one maybe underperformed a little from what they could have been expecting. Are you ready, Miles, to rate Ultraman Rising?
Yeah, I am.
These numbers.
How are you feeling about it, bud?
Well, I appreciated the movie, but my enjoyment of it was marked down a little bit because of just how long it was. It definitely, I definitely checked the runtime a few times, and honestly, it took me several attempts at watching this to get through. I kept getting distracted up until like halfway through the movie and having to start it over. So I started this a few times. So I, you know, to be fair, like I said, when I watched K-pop Demon Hunters, I watched it one time all the way through. And there's a reason why that movie was so crazy popular. But yeah, that being said, I think this is a great experience for general audiences. And it just lost me a little bit with that meandering plot, but I still loved what I watched, and I will go back and watch this. So the least I can give in a film for that, for my personal enjoyment, is an 8 out of 10. This is like the best animated kaiju movie I think out there. I might have enjoyed the Sea Beast as a movie a little bit better, but I feel like this is a better kaiju film. What about you, Miles? Where do you rank your
Right there with you, man. There is a lot to like about this movie. There is a lot this movie just fails to uphold. And it's, I don't want to ding it for just because it's a kid's movie, because I don't think that's the problem with it. I do think that it does, because this is a weirdly adult themed kid's movie. Like, you have the characters constantly cracking beers. You have a lot of talks about people dying or getting killed. And you have a lot of serious consequences in this film. There's a lot of good mature pathos here. The movie does seem to have a little bit of identity crisis. Like, it wants to be a fun kids film. It also wants to be a really good Ultraman film. And it has all these great ideas. And it unfortunately fails to hold up most of them. That said, this is a super, super fun Ultraman romp. And the story is really fun. Emmy is adorable and is fun to watch, you know, toddle around.
When I was in Japan, I saw a lot of Emmy toys.
Yeah, and I mean, I get it. Like, I'll probably watch this again. I'll probably watch this with Krista. I think she's going to like it a lot. I think it's a good way to get young kids into Ultraman. I think it's a good thing to have around, because you don't have to watch a show. Boom, here's a movie. Oh, you're familiar with Ultraman now? Cool, now watch a show. Or watch the other Netflix show. There's so many things you can do there. But I like the animation. It's overall, it's clean, despite my flaws with the character designs as the humans. But yeah, it's a super fun movie. And I mean, really, based off of like my experience with the Godzilla movies that Netflix did, this is by and large, you know, worlds better. So yeah. I'm right there with you. 8 out of 10 from. Yeah,
give us a Godzilla movie with the. You're just gonna have
Godzilla Jr. toddle around and do the same.
Oh my goodness! Yes, I'll take it. Give us that cute Heisei design for
and then big ol' eyes.
Yeah. Technically, in this movie, I think it's, like I said, the best animated kaiju project out there. The animation style is amazing. It's weird, a little gross in times. It just works. Like, Emmy spitting up, it's so gross. Yeah. This movie. Voice actors, great. Like I said, nobody super high profile, but it's still very solid character work. But yeah, I feel like the heart and soul of Ultraman was maybe a little lost in this project, and the script a little convoluted because it was this series that was pitched as like another movie that turned into this movie. And I feel like maybe the writers and director Shannon Tindall, he just didn't want to give up any of his babies. Like, he probably knew that like this was the only shot he had at telling this story. So kind of put everything in. But still, giving it very high marks, just dinging it for maybe the length of it. I'm giving it a 9 out of 10 for its technical aspects. What about you, Miles?
Well, like I said, I definitely had problems with how the human characters were designed. I found them, well, how the guys were designed specifically. Most of the women looked pretty great. And even some of the expressive baseball teams were teammates looked great. I love the coach. Love the coach. I would have absolutely watched the show, like a show of like focusing on the baseball stuff. I was super into all of that.
Yeah.
And so like I'm so torn in the script because like there, it does a lot of great things. What it does well, it does very, very well. Unfortunately, not every aspect gets lifted up. Like I said, there's a lot of underbaked B plots. There's a lot of underbaked supporting characters that could have been served better if they had taken out less of Emmy spitting up and toddling around. And again, I want to reiterate that it's not my problem with the film. Still have that stuff. Just cut it down a little bit. This movie's 2 hours long. We could have either kept the length and, you know, given that time to more characters, or just cut it in general. And I think you would have had a tight, fun movie. I like the interpretation of the Ultra franchise here. I think they do a very good job, like, needling that thread very, very well. Especially, like, I think the animation fights look fantastic. Especially, like, when you see all the beams at the end fighting the mecha.
Well, I liked Mecha Gigatron, but when it got to the Destroyer shell, I was like, oh, this is a bit too Pacific Rim for me.
I mean, but that's all it was ever. Like, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm sticking with an 8 out of 10. I think that it's very solid, but it does come up short in many areas that kind of outweigh some of the good things.
For its importance, like you said, I think this is a very excellent method to get people into Ultraman that maybe haven't seen the show before. I think it's a great animated kaiju project to get kids into kaiju movies. probably the best gateway, I would say, for general audiences. I can tell you, this is probably the most people ever that have watched a single Ultraman project in one place. I don't think any of the shows have ever had this large of a reach as Netflix.
Maybe Shin Ultraman?
No. I mean, I think the box office numbers alone can belay the fact that this movie probably was seen by many, many more eyeballs.
But no,
I think this is the largest platform the superhero has ever had. And this is, you know, after three seasons of the Ultraman series. I feel like this movie is just had a much larger reach. But that's why it stinks that this is not getting a sequel likely. But it doesn't matter because it's already achieved its objective. And I think we probably will see other Ultraman projects if Netflix keeps this partnership with Tsuburaya. Maybe a different Ultraman series. But yeah, the same
Maybe they'll fund Otto's Shin Ultra 7 that he keeps saying he wants to do.
No, but
yes,
I will say that Shin Ultraman did a lot, helped spread the Ultra love. And I think this did as much, if not more. So I'm giving it a 9 out of 10 for its importance. And it's also just great kaiju movie, you know, great representation for the genre and something very different, which is always nice and important. What about you, Miles?
So I'm not as convinced about its reach and impact as you are. I'm going to need to see some analytics there.
Well, they're secret, unfortunately.
That said, I do agree with you that it's one of the better animated kaiju projects. It's certainly a great way to get someone younger into an Ultraman or kaiju stuff in general, because the monsters do play a big role in this film. And so as something that's easily digestible, like that in of itself, like, is a big thing, because Ultraman has, you know, what, 70 years of television shows and movies and all this stuff, and it can be very difficult to suggest something. So to have something like, hey, check this out, that is invaluable. So I am right there with you in its value as a piece of kaiju cinema. So I'm also going to give it a 9 out of 10 here.
Okay, so that puts you at a light 8, and I'm at a light 9, 8.6. That means we're bringing that average down to an 8 out of 10 for Ultraman Rising.
Right where I wanted it.
Yeah, I feel like this one could have been a 9 easily if I just enjoyed it a little bit more. Like I said, we're both 8 out of 10, which is still, I think, on our scale, great or very good. Yes. And like I said, I think I will get a hankering to watch this at some point. The same way I will want to go back and watch Shin Ultraman. But I think of the two of these, I'd probably pick Shin Ultraman if I was going for one Ultraman kind of modern movie. But yeah, that is all she wrote for Ultraman Rising. Still enters our category of star reviews on our Letterboxd account, things with 8, 9, or 10 stars. You can find our Letterboxd if you go over there and search Kaiju versus History and see all of our reviews in 5-star format. So this movie would get a 4 out of 5 stars from us here at the podcast. You can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. Thank you for all the folks that have reached out. We have some upcoming collaborations with some fun other podcasts that listen in. So you'll be hearing about that in the future. Find us on social media at Kaiju versus History, or go to our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Rate and review our shows wherever you find the podcast, or share it with your friends who need to know about kaiju. Miles, what are we doing in the next week?
Well, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. And we're going to catch you next week when we dig into the digital DVD bins at Walmart marked on clearance, as we instead buy them full-priced on srscinema.com. That's right. Tune in next week for History versus Kaiju Glam Metal Shark Attack.